Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the Pocket Show on the British Tech Network. I have assembled a superb panel for your listening pleasure tonight to discuss all things that go in your pocket. First of all, we've got a couple of new faces to the network. First of all, we've got Kevin Wheeler, who I suppose some of you might recognize from the SMR podcast. How are you this evening, Kevin?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, good, good. You're looking forward to speaking all things Windows, iOS, and Android this evening?
I sure am.
Yes. Cool. Next to him, we have Steve McLaughlin, or Door, as he goes by, from Android App Addicts. Sir, how are you this evening?
Hello, sir. I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good, good. Is it kind of afternoon there? Are you just kind of relaxing this afternoon, or are you taking a skip off work?
Well, yeah, it's around 3 in the afternoon, and since I'm a government employee, I have plenty of leave to take, so I took off early.
Very good. I hope nobody's listening to, from the government.
If they are, I'm still getting paid.
Very good. Very good. And finally, we have Dave Hamilton of MacGeekGab, Mac Observer. How are you this afternoon, sir?
I'm doing splendid this afternoon. It's a since it's evening where you are, I figure it's okay to start drinking. So I've got a beer going, and I'll adopt your time zone for this show.
Exactly. It's 20 past eight for me just now. So it's all good. Yeah, just everybody crack open a beer. Everything's grand.
That's right.
Done. Good. So a government employee getting paid and also drinking. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Don't worry. Only the NSA is listening because we're doing this on Skype. So it's okay.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Grant, so... As I said at the top of the show, we're here to talk about all things in your pocket. First of all, I think the easiest one I think to mention, and probably the one that's going to get the most debate and the most discussion going, and the biggest mobile news of the week, in my opinion, is of course the Amazon announcement of the Fire Phone. So that was an event in Seattle on June the 18th. For those of you who don't know, it's basically running the similar kind of OS as you get the Kindle Fire. So it's a forked version of Android. This one's called Fire OS 3.5. It's got a 4.7-inch screen, quad-core 2.2 gigahertz processor, Arduino 330 graphics card, and 2 gigabytes of RAM. A couple of big features on this are, of course, the infrared sensors that see your head position, which was sort of rumored beforehand with the whoa video. But the other thing is, which really kind of caught my eye, was Firefly. So first of all, I just kind of want to throw it out there and see. Door. Excuse me. I'm going to score out your name and put Door in my little note.
That's okay. I have been called much worse, and that was just earlier today.
Grad. Okay. So, Door, what's your opinions on this as our resident Android chap? Is this something you're even remotely interested in picking up?
Well, me, no, absolutely not. There's no way I would ever pick this phone up just because it's locked into the Amazon ecosystem. Sure. But I can now safely say I can get my father-in-law a smartphone because it has Mayday feature in, which I think is a key selling feature just so I don't have to answer his questions.
Exactly. So for those of you who don't know, Mayday is the feature that came in the Kindle Fire HD. And basically what it is a button, exactly as the name suggests, is a Mayday button that supposedly within 15 seconds, you will have a human representative on the other end of your Kindle chatting to you through whatever problem you may have.
Yeah. And it's painfully obvious this phone's been in the works for 4 years because the 3D infrared camera thing, I think really is way, way too late. I think if that was 3 years ago or so, it might have garnished more recognition. But sure. I think today it's just it's just a little piddly thing that I don't think many people are really going to take advantage of.
Yeah, it seems to be more of a gimmick than anything else. I mean, most of the articles that I've read they kind of talk about this whole kind of snow globe type lock screen thing that is pretty incredible when you first pick it up. And after a couple of seconds, you're like, nah, all right, okay, that's great. What does it do now? And I think as far as I could tell from the few people who have actually picked it up and used it, essentially you use that feature for kind of opening up menus and things like that, from what I could tell. So you tilt the phone to the left to open up one menu and tilt it to the right to open up another menu.
Interesting. I mean, I'll say it's very interesting. I like competition. I like disruption even more. I would like to see the phone at least be moderately successful just to shake things up a little bit.
Sure.
But me, no, I cannot picture suggesting anyone with any interest of doing hardcore things on their phone, aka rooting, ROMing, taking control, doing more higher end things. I don't think this is the phone to do it on.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin, what's your thoughts? Are you interested in this at all? I mean, you're a Windows guy, aren't you? You're a Windows phone guy.
Yeah, I'm a Windows guy, but it seems like this phone is designed for a pocket shopper, right? Somebody who's out and about and they want to pull out their phone. But to me, it's kind of a high-end device, and the cost for something to specialize in scanning items and cross-checking against their database to see which is cheaper. Most of your phones today have the Amazon app that has barcode readers, and you can pretty much do the same thing there if you want to do a quick price check while you're in a store like Best Buy or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the Firefly feature. So basically, this is the idea that you can point the smartphone's camera at anything almost, so CDs, games, books, food, movies, everything.
Well,
and you can get that information through.
And I'm sorry, I'll say really quick, we've had this for years on Android. It's called Google Goggles. I mean, I can take a cover picture of like a box of cereal, not the barcode, and it can tell me information about it and where to buy it. So I understand them pushing this as a feature, but in reality, it's not. I think it's really missed the mark.
So I think it's removing a step in the process. I totally agree that Android has had that for a while, but it is removing that one step. So forgive me if this is an incorrect description of how it works, but basically Google Goggles said you pointed at a box of, I don't know, Cocoa Pops or something like that, and it came up and said, this is a box of Cocoa Pops, you can buy it in the following places. So it was basically bringing up the Google shopping interface, and then you had to tap through, and then you could carry on. Whereas the added benefit of this, while the technology is still the same, the added benefit of this is that you just point something at a box, and it just goes, do you want a one-click buy that? Okay, grand, done. And that's the end of it. Is that correct? Is that how the Google one works? I've not actually used this. It's just my understanding of it.
Yes and no. There's two ways you can use it.
Okay.
You can either open up Goggles, point it at something and take a picture, or you can just have it scan all your pictures. So you just take a regular picture of something, and then in a couple seconds to a minute later, it will pop up a notification saying a match has been found.
Right. Okay. Okay. So the other things that this can do as well, similar to Shazam, so you can do audio recognition and then presumably buy the CD or buy the MP3 or something like that. Does anybody buy CDs anymore? I don't know. It definitely mentions CDs in the release. It can also do the same for TV shows and movies and things like that. And Dave, you're strangely quiet in the back there. Are you just not even remotely interested in this at all?
No, I'm actually quite interested.
Okay.
You know, I was interested in the Kindle Fire HDX as well.
Right.
In fact, I was very impressed by that. Again, with the caveat that any user, I'm not even expert users, certainly it's not the right thing because it's locked out of, you know, or you're locked into Amazon store only. Sure. But I found it frustrating to not even be able to get things that I wanted from Google Play that I just sort of expected to be able to get. You know, I've heard about Android. I know more, but just from a kind of a casual user's view, I want this thing. What do you mean it's not available? It's available for every other Android tablet. Why not this one? And that, you know, obviously leads down a rat hole of trying to figure out how to root the thing. And it's
sure.
It's very difficult on the HDX. So with that caveat in place, I think this phone is interesting. I hope it does at least moderately well for him. I mean, it's an Android it's a phone version of the Kindle Fire. And I think there's people for whom, especially with Firefly and with the instant video help, I think that's a good thing. I agree. I'm not against it at all. The gimmick factor being what it is, whatever. Yeah. The iPhone's got the gimmick factor stuff too that I turn off. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I suppose all operating systems have the kind of gimmick things as well. I mean, I think it was in a Wired article, so just to comment on the need to root it, or the requirement to root it if you're kind of a hardcore user. The software vice president, Rob Williams of Amazon, had said, "We don't have Google services on the device as of yet." So there's no access to any of the kind of stuff you'd expect, like Google Play or anything like that, which is a bit of a shame.
Did he say as of yet, or did he say, I mean, what was the inference? Is it, and it's coming, or no freaking way? So I think it's no freaking way.
the exact quote says, "We don't have Google services on the device, no." But the article I was reading went on to say, without quoting anybody, to suggest that it's possible in the future, but they just, it definitely wasn't an absolutely no. But I can't see why they would. They have their own app store. Maybe they were just wanting to kind of be vague so they didn't completely shut the door on that idea. I don't know. Yeah, I think it was Wired's article.
It's not there on the HDX. I don't see it coming. I mean, I see this being a funnel into Amazon's ecosystem, which is their whole MO, right? Yeah. You know, we've got stuff to buy. Come buy it.
I guess the question is, are these features... Like we said, most of these features already exist in some form or fashion.
Sure.
Is it enough to draw users away from the ecosystem that they're already in?
Yeah. I think that's it. I am a huge Amazon customer. Absolutely huge. If Amazon is able to give me, I will just buy it. I use Subscribe and Save. Instant Video less so, but that's only because it only just came to the UK a couple of months ago and it's got a fairly poor library. But I really, really want to like this phone and I really want to like the tablet, but it's not quite there. And for me personally, even though my entire life outside the Apple ecosystem is fully inside the Amazon ecosystem, almost to the point that everything software is Apple, and everything else in my life, if I can do it, I'll do it in Amazon. It isn't really doing it for me. The only thing I would say is, carry on, Dave.
No, I was going to say that's a valuable thing. Cause you're a geek, right? Mm. So you're okay making a split choice.
Sure.
But Amazon engenders a lot of loyalty from people.
Mm.
Right. And so if you're not a geek and you don't really care about these nuances, and maybe people should and maybe they shouldn't, but casual users think, oh, Amazon, great. I can get one more thing from that place that I love and trust. Yeah. I mean, they have the best loyalty program in the business, right, with Amazon Prime.
Sure. Yeah.
There's no, and it's super successful. And I mean, there's college classes built to study Amazon Prime. Seriously, this is a big deal. So yeah, we can't, that's a good point. We can't discount the loyalty that people have to Amazon. People really love that company.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I recently bought my grandfather an Amazon, just to give another perspective of why you might buy an Amazon product. My grandfather doesn't have a clue who Amazon are. I wouldn't know the Amazon logo for him in the face. But the main reason is because the Kindle Fire has such massive big buttons. I think I mentioned this a couple of shows ago in the Pocket Show. The actual icons and the interface is so huge. It means with his big old man hands, he can actually use that touch interface. He can't use an iPad or an Android phone or anything like that because the icons are too small and he has, you know what I mean, big old man hands. But he finds the Amazon tablet really, really easy to use because the buttons are huge. I don't know if the phone's going to be like that. I don't think so, based on the screenshots we've seen. But that's a completely different use case there. the phone will be available in the US only, sadly for me. Not that I was planning to buy it anyway, but it will be available in the US only on AT&T. 32GB model will be $199 with a 2-year contract, $649 no contract. And a 64GB will be $299 $749. $299 obviously with a 2-year contract. Is that equal to, you know, your iPhone 5S's, your Samsung Galaxy S5s and all that kind of stuff? Is that similar prices to those phones over there?
I'll say if the price comes down in like 60 days, then yes, because typically phones only hover around 200 to 250 for a short time.
Okay.
They do come down fairly quickly. I think for a launch price, that is a touch expensive.
Right, okay. And certainly considering that the hardware isn't incredible. I mean, it's okay. It's not incredible as well. So interesting. We'll see how that kind of pans out. A couple of other things I just wanted to mention at the end there is that there's currently the SDK for Firefly has been made available, and apps like MyFitnessPal, Vivinio. It's for wines. I don't know exactly if that's how it's pronounced. A couple other apps are already taking advantage of it. So MyFitnessPal allows you to actually take a photograph of the food you're currently eating, and it will pop in all the nutritional information into your app. So MyFitnessPal was discussed in the last Pocket Show, but it's basically an app that just kind of tracks your calories and your exercise and things like that. So it's an interesting one. And the Vivinio, if that's how you pronounce it, tracks information about the wine that you're drinking. So presumably you just take a photograph of the label. So that's the Amazon Fire Phone. The iPhone, the first generation iPhone, has been seen on eBay and has now been sold for $15,000. Are you digging about in the back of your garage there, Dave, for your original iPhone?
Yeah, mine actually sits on my desk, believe it or not. It's it's the one I gave to my wife when the first iPhone came out, and it went through several hands here in the house. My son used it as a iPod Touch for a while. So I looked at it and like, I wonder what that one's worth. Now, I think I still have the original box. I might not, but it's definitely well used. So
is that the original?
It is the original.
The original, the 4 GB, the one that was only available for a couple of months. Months or something like that. All right. Okay, cool. So do you wait in the queue for that one or? Did you do the big way outside an Apple store?
How we got this? I think we got it shortly after the fact. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah, sure. It's incredible that this one's going for 15,000. I mean, it was splitting you in the box based on the photographs and things like that. It was still sealed and all that kind of stuff. I kind of put this story in. I mean, partly to sort of laugh at £15,000. I mean, who's got that kind of cash to spend on an old phone? But also, I was just interested in you guys' opinions. I know I personally, because I mean, I'm a geek and I absolutely love old tech and I collect old tech and things like that. And I'm just curious if this is an Apple thing or, I mean, Kevin, do you keep all your old phones and have them up on a shelf and look at them every day and dust them?
I do keep most of my old phones, right. Mainly because most of my family, we all use Windows phones. So okay. I have 3 daughters and as they break phones, then I have phones to replace them with.
Right, okay.
But that's the only reason I keep them around. I keep the boxes.
Do you do the same? Do you keep all your old Android phones?
Yeah, I will say I have my first ever flip phone up to what I currently have still. Right. Even though I just used a service called Swappa, I'm now tempted to sell every device I have.
Is that a similar thing at Gazelle? Is it the same idea?
No, this is a buy sell trade site with people, not with a company. You can get some pretty good deals on it. I was really shocked about how seamless and how easy the process was. Everyone I know who's used it has raved about it because everything they got from there was really good. And I got a pretty fair price for the phone that I just sold on it.
Okay. Oh, well, so I suppose you're kind of quite happy to get rid of them then. You don't have that kind of attachment to it in the same way that perhaps somebody's going to spend $15,000 on an iPhone is.
Well, I don't have that kind of attachment, no. But I will say I also use my old phones as servers in my house using the application called Servers Ultimate on Android. It basically lets me emulate any kind of server you can think of on my Android device in a couple clicks.
Wow, that's quite cool. So what kind of stuff could you run on those? Because obviously the older ones will be quite low powered. Like Minecraft servers, that kind of thing? Or is it something a little bit more advanced?
Well, not Java servers. No, like email servers, FTP servers, SSH servers, DLNA, Samba servers, all kinds of stuff.
Okay. Sorry, I was just reading. The quality's fine here, Dave. Sorry, apologies. I kind of got put off there.
Great.
So recording at this end, so the quality's fine. That's quite cool. That's a whole new level of geekery for me, I have to admit. that's pretty cool that you did that with them. This whole kind of story here has just kind of got me a little bit kind of, I don't know, £15,000. Just people should be spending their money wiser. But there you go. That's, I guess that's just one of those things. The other thing I wanted to just discuss, there was a story here on Mobile News, and it was Windows Phone OS to dominate B2B by mid-2015. So this was a quote from Lilia Martin, who's the Windows Phone UK director. It was a bit of an interesting article. There was a few things. It wasn't, in my opinion, the best journalism on the planet, but the quotes were quite interesting. It was coming out of Lilia. Our ambition is to be number one in the business market, and my ambition is to achieve that within a year. Supposedly at the moment in the UK enterprise, Nokia's market share is 18%, Samsung 17% and Apple iOS 35%. She claims that the decision makers in business are increasingly being put off by the high costs and limited choice of Apple iPhone handsets, whilst the experience and security issues in Android are causing customer concerns. I thought that quote in itself was a little out of date, was the first thing that kind of hit me. Experience and security issues in Android sort of made me question it a little bit, and the limited choice of iPhone handsets as well. Now, what do you guys think? Did you get a chance to read the article? Do you agree with any of the points or anything like that?
I agree that Microsoft wants that.
I don't agree with with them making these types of predictions.
Sure.
We've heard, you know, being in the Windows Phone camp, we've been hearing these kind of predictions from Gartner and IDC since Windows Phone came on the scene about, you know, 2014 was supposed to be the year we overtake Apple or the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And we know where we stand with that.
Yeah.
But I do believe that Windows Phone is poised to make a big impact in the enterprise. With 8.1 and enterprise features that they've added, and along with them integrating it, the MDM, mm-hmm. so that you can use Microsoft's native tools that they use in the enterprise, and also companies like Good Technology and Mobile Iron, allowing them access to the APIs that they didn't have access to before.
Right. Okay. Dore, you work in government. Do you see a lot of Windows phones already in government, or is it a big BlackBerry place?
Hell no. I don't see them anywhere. But, and I'll say, personal feelings aside, because I literally despise everything Microsoft has made except for the mice and their old access points. They were pretty good. I do think it's only a matter of time before Windows phones literally explode on the enterprise and they start to go everywhere. Well, just because they're the ones who should naturally integrate with Active Directory and Exchange better than anyone else.
Sure.
They have, I would say, an opening, but it's not an opening. It's a causeway right into the enterprise. And once I feel everything else catches up, AKA their Surface tablets and their mobile devices become a little bit more out there, public facing, I think it's only a matter of time before they become really popular.
All right. Okay. I mean, I'm a consultant, so I kind of go around the place, but I'm working in Scottish government just now, and it's all BlackBerries. Kind of company phone of choice is all BlackBerries. Don't see any Windows phones. I haven't even seen anybody personally carrying Windows phones in my office. But the one weird thing is, it's the I walked in there and it was kind of day two. I've only been there 8 weeks or something just now. And there was the first Surface tablet I've ever seen in the wild was lying on somebody's desk. I don't know whether that says anything, one Surface tablet. But at least that was the first one I'd ever seen in the wild. I'd never seen anybody else using it out with this environment ever since this Surface came out.
Paul, I've got some customers and they've been screaming to get their hands on Windows Phone. And I don't just say that because I'm a fanboy of Windows Phone, but one of the things that held them back is Microsoft's decision to go consumer first with Windows Phone.
Right.
And like I said earlier, not having the MDM APIs available to take advantage of. But like I said, with 8.1, that's changing. And we're already swapping out our BlackBerries for iPhones. And I can see us moving toward Windows phones very soon.
Really? All right. Okay.
I guess that's the curious part for me. I mean, I live steeped in the Apple world, and not just from the news standpoint, but I, you know, wind up dealing with folks who are supporting a bunch of iPhones. And, you know, MDM on the iPhone has gotten way better, right? Apple's support for it, and they've changed some things. Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising to hear that people are swapping out their BlackBerries for iPhones in the enterprise. My question is, with Windows, and I hate to use a catchphrase, but is it too late, right? I mean, is there already so much momentum with people moving toward the iPhone? Are they going to about face and say, oh, yeah, we're leaving BlackBerry. We were going to go to the iPhone. Now we're going to go to Windows. I know MDM in 8.1 is better. Is it mature enough that people will make the jump now? Or is it one of these wait and see? And is that where this 2015 number comes from?
I think right now it's mature. I think they've caught up, to be honest. Like I said, okay. I deal with the iPhones from day to day. And the same MDM settings that are available on the iPhone are now available to Windows Phone 8.1. Now it's about the ecosystem. Our right. customers have Windows tablets out there. They have Windows laptops, Windows workstations, and they're really looking at that synergy that Microsoft is bringing across their ecosystem. And it's really starting to look very compelling to them.
MDM, for anybody that doesn't know, is mobile device management. Just in case you were hearing the acronym being thrown about there. Do you see a lot of people carrying two mobiles still? Because I'm just kind of thinking that this, everything that we're saying here is talking about the enterprise picking up these handsets. And everything that I'm seeing is sort of more people going away to the sort of bring your own device model. And that sort of breaks the idea that it's going to come into UK enterprise.
Well, we looked at that very close, mm-hmm. but it always comes back, especially in certain enterprises in government. It comes back to things like data spills. What do you do? Do you confiscate that user's device? Sure. Is a user willing to sign their device up to be taken if corporate data is spilled onto it? Those types of things. And a lot of corporations aren't willing to take that risk.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, I mean, you've got like applications like Good and things like that that sort of come halfway there, but they're kind of broken in their experience because they're a sandbox within a sandbox, which is pretty horrendous. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't see anybody. Oh, sorry, that's unfair. I do see people carrying mobile devices, but it's nowhere near as prevalent as it was even, say, you know, 5 years ago. You know, everybody carried about two mobiles, a personal one and a work one. I just don't see that. I totally get your argument there. Specifically in kind of finance and things like that, I can imagine that being a big thing about data spills and all that kind of stuff. But interesting. Another quote from this article is, when you think of Apple, how many CEOs and CIOs really want to pay for their employees to use expensive premium devices when they can choose from a full range of devices? That struck me as a strange quote as well. I wanted to get your feelings on this one here. It's sort of almost, this was a quote from the Windows Phone UK director, and it sort of almost damaged the brand. That quote there is almost kind of saying our devices are not as fancy and premium as iPhones or Android phones. Well, in this one, it is specifically Apple they're referring to, which I think is really unfair. I mean, I don't carry a Windows device at all, but Ewan Rankin, who hosts on a couple other shows in the British Tech Network, he swears by his Windows phone. He absolutely loves it. He's a photographer at trade, so one of the main things is, and I forget which one it was, is one of the Nokia ones that's got the incredible camera. And I've had a look at it, and it is actually a really nice phone. And I think it's sort of damaging the brand a little bit there. I mean, Kevin, do you feel like that, or am I just maybe being a little bit too hot on that one?
Well, I look at that quote and I see that what she's saying is there's a range of devices that Microsoft that you have available to mm-hmm. you for Windows phones. You have some high end devices like the 1020, the 1520. You have mid range, and then you can go down to the 520 where you're lower end, and the prices range with mm-hmm. the iPhone. If you're getting a modern device of the iPhone, you're getting the 5S or the 5C. And those are very expensive devices.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. You know, I think there's a little bit of apologizing going on here, if I may. But listen, I've been accused to that many times, so forgive me if you must. But I don't know, that sounds like a quote of desperation, right? You know, we've got all this stuff. I mean, even just you describing it, it's like, oh crap, why do I want to have to sit down and go through and figure out 8 models of different stuff? I don't, right? You know, you pick what you want, and developers don't like that. It's a very difficult thing. Of course, I think Apple's going to fork their ecosystem a little bit with a larger iPhone in the fall. It certainly seems like, you know, whatever the next iPhone, be it the iPhone 6 or whatever we call it, is going to have a larger screen. At WWDC, they were definitely pushing the message of use auto layout. Don't design layouts specifically for any given screen size. Mm-hmm. You know, use auto layout and give it hints. So I think that's coming. But even still, I'm not convinced that having 6 different models and a low end and a high end, and you don't know what capabilities you have, and the guy that has the high end phone says, oh, I can do all this stuff, and then your phone doesn't do that, oh, I thought it was the same. That's not a good thing. We've been there.
If it's implemented properly, if you look at the Windows Phone 8 devices that are out there now, they're all going to get upgraded to 8.1. They all have those same capabilities. I think what we're seeing is people want choice, right? They're tired of the small 4-inch screens. They want something larger. They want a choice of devices. And you're seeing that from the consumer side, and you're starting to see that from the enterprise side.
Yeah, I can see that.
Honestly, I'm technically on my enterprise architectural governance board where I work. It looks like we are going to go to a BYOD type system. But I'll say, I don't think enterprises want choice. I don't think enterprises want fancy. I think enterprises want stable, long-term solutions. Sure, they want phones that are better than average, but I don't think they really want a lot of choice or a lot of fancy. Where I know when Windows phones first started, you had to adhere to a certain specs of hardware. For me as a user, I don't like that. I want choice. I want something more powerful for me, something less powerful for my wife, something even less powerful for my father-in-law. But for a business, I don't think we want choice. I think we want the standard.
Mm.
Yeah. You mentioned you're on this committee, and stability is an important thing, and consistency is an important thing. Is Windows Mobile in general seen as something that checks those boxes, or is it, I don't know,
Right now, no. Windows Surface, we're looking at as a tablet type device, but as far as phone goes, it looks like we're going to probably go towards the Apple model because of the MDM and because it's a little bit easier to lock down than Android.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me on both counts, right? The Surface for that, because it's cheap and it's got some legs, but I don't know. The Windows Mobile thing seems to be too much of a moving target, and it's Microsoft. They're not. I don't know. They haven't been impressive lately. So I can't.
I'm not understanding what are you looking for out of what would make it more impressive than it is now. I mean, if you look at what they've done and where they've come, in really a short period of time, they actually did a reboot with Windows Phone 8.0. And now we're at 8.1, and the feature set is there. The enterprise feature set is there. The stability is there. The operating system can run on lower cost devices. Why not go that way for some of your customers?
That's just the thing, right? Is they did this reboot with 8.0, and it's like, okay, well, you know, where are you coming from with this? It needed to change, right? They're constantly changing their direction, and not in a predictable way, not in an iterative way, but in a scrambling way, it seems like, from a mobile standpoint. Listen, Microsoft has had a lot over the years. I just am not getting that feeling from them on the mobile side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think 8.1 certainly is a move in the right direction. I kind of see what you're saying there, Dave. They have been a little bit schizophrenic in their approach to mobile, but I think 8.1 certainly is if you were going to ever say that any move for Windows Phone was a move in the right direction, I would argue that 8.1 is that move.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would blame Apple. I mean, if we're not talking about cloud right now, but maybe we are in terms of ecosystem, Apple has the same problem with cloud, right? They've stumbled with cloud, and every time it's a new paradigm and it sucks, right? I mean, iOS 8 and Yosemite are going to use CloudKit, right? Which appears and sounds the same as what was prior. But yeah. once you get that, you have to decide to leave all your old stuff behind, and you either have to migrate everything or nothing. And on the case of the Mac, you have to migrate if you move to Yosemite when that happens, assuming things stay the same as they are now, which I think they will, but it's beta, so anything can happen. But and you're lost. You can't share documents back and forth. I mean, you know, there's so, you know, Apple has their issues too. And I would say the same thing about them. But as far as an OS, that's kind of where I am with Microsoft. It's like, okay, well, now we're in this herky jerky thing. Stability is important. Predictability is important. Where are we going with this, guys? What's going on here? And that's where it gets frustrating.
Yeah. Well, I have to take the easy pot shot and say, well, the reason why the Apple cloud stuff doesn't work is because it's running on Microsoft Azure.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, OneDrive runs on that, and it's pretty solid. You can actually share between platforms on OneDrive. I don't think it has anything to do with Azure. I just think Apple didn't take the cloud serious.
Yeah, no.
Well, you understand, I am a Linux weenie, and I am bound by contract to say that kind of stuff whenever the opportunity comes about.
It's true. But yeah, Apple just has stumbled with the cloud, and it's not because of their infrastructure. I mean, they've got good Oracle stuff on the back end. They've got proven Microsoft server stuff on the back. It's not the back end. It's the engineering of the solution. And granted, you know, they followed a path for a long time where it was heading down, where no file system access, all of this. And they fixed that, which, you know, again, very akin to what's going on with Windows Mobile is, yeah, it, you know, they've fixed it in the right direction. But can we trust that 2 years from now, it's going to be in the same spot? And with Apple in the cloud, I would say, no, we can't trust that. And with Windows Mobile OS, can we trust that? No, because they're not predictable with it. They're kind of stumbling and trying to find their way. What's that?
I think their direction has been laid out pretty clear which way they're going.
I think it maybe has been over the last, I don't know. It sort of feels like over the last few months, even to be fair, maybe since the beginning of the year.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. Right. I mean, that's irrelevant. You got to give me years of this.
Sure.
So that if I'm going to go and invest in 5,000 units of something and know that I want them in my employees' hands for 5 years and maybe they'll only be in their hands for three and I replace them, but I don't want to have to change ecosystems even though I'm staying in the same ecosystem. And that's where it gets frustrating with this stuff.
Yeah. I think my hope is that Satya Nadella, because he's an enterprise guy, I really hope that this is the direction that they might go. And he feels like a little bit more of a, I'm trying to think of the delicate way to put this, but he seems to be a little bit more focused than, shall we say, Ballmer was. And it kind of feels like if they're going to head in any direction, and they're going to head in a direction confidently and securely, it will be enterprise for Windows Phone. That's certainly the way I feel about it. And I would hope that they do the best, because frankly, if Windows Phone ceases to be, I'm going to have to get an Amazon phone person for this panel. I don't know. I'm going to have to rethink the new format.
Shopping in the enterprise.
Yes. So I'll just take a wee moment here to thank our sponsors. I'd like to thank UK2. They're absolutely superb. They provide all the bandwidth and things like that for hosting all of our shows. If you want to listen to any show that's ever been done on this network, any of the old shows that's now defunct for a variety of reasons, anything like that, they're all still available, and that's thanks to our amazing sponsors from UK2. If you head on over to thebritishnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link, you will see a click through on there to UK2 plus a whole bunch of voucher codes to get all sorts of awesome discounts and things like that off of UK2. They're absolutely superb. I personally am a user of of UK2. There was an awkward pause there that I took there. But I'm a user of UK2. I absolutely love them. Their support is second to none. I never ever quote British Tech Network when I'm phoning up a support or anything like that. So it's not as if we're getting preferential treatment or anything like that. But their support, they come straight back and they regularly go above and beyond the call of duty. If you are not in the UK, they are available, albeit their name's UK2. You can buy their services all over the globe. You currently have discounts there for 20% off domain hosting, domain names, and all sorts of other awesome vouchers and things like that for VPS, VPN servers, and all sorts of stuff like that. They're absolutely superb, guys. And any of the new domain names that are coming out and things like that, they're regularly giving us updates and sending you emails to tell you when they're available. So you can go and purchase them. They're absolutely superb. The other people I just want to mention as the great guys at Network Union, they basically provide the pipes in and out of British Tech Tower. They provide all the bandwidth and things like that for the live shows and whatnot. So if you work within an IT or within IT, a large company, they can help you with BT, MPLS, WAN, SIP, and Ethernet connectivity. Whether you are new to BT or an existing BT client, you can choose to engage BT via Network Union. Existing clients, nothing changes. Same contracts and support, but you will change your account management to the Network Union, reassign your contract with a different area of BT. If you're an SME within business broadband, they can check your fibre upgrades, call packages, even BT Office 365, and everything everywhere mobile. Bundled together for savings, are happy to deal with new inquiries. So please, again, use britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors or click on the sponsors link on the homepage there, and you will see the Network Union stuff under there. Just use the click through on there and they can they'll take your details, they'll give you a call back or chat to you about everything like that. Absolutely superb. So please support UK2 and the Network Union. They are great, great guys and they support British Tech and we hope that you support them too. Gentlemen, do we have any cool things this evening? I will start with Dor. What's your pick this evening for us, sir?
Well, first off, Posse, you do understand I am a Android app addict.
Sure.
And for you to ask me to pick one is really, I'm not going to lie. For 2 weeks, I've been stressing over what to pick because I have this nonstop flow of to what I think is really cool.
Okay, I'll give you two stuff. Then. You can have two.
Well, no. I'm going to cheat then. I'm going to pick 2,431.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
That is the number of applications that have been reviewed, hands-on reviewed and talked about on the show Android App Addicts at podnuts.com/AAA. The longest running AAA Android show in existence.
So you know, you could do a pick as well. I'm completely okay for you to plug your show, but you could do a pick too.
Okay.
You don't have to. Do it. Feel free. Just
okay. Well, then I'm going to bring it back. Servers Ultimate is, to be honest, the easiest way I've found to test things in my network, including I have it set up as a open VPN.
Okay.
So where I'm anywhere in the world, as long as I can get on the internet, I can VPN back into my house through my quote unquote dead Android phone that as long as I have Wi-Fi on, I can securely access everything on my network with no worries, thanks to that app.
Okay. So what was that one called again?
Servers Ultimate. Yeah, and I encourage people, take a peek at it. Granted, you have to have root, but you're talking to Dor. Root comes standard. it is a fantastically cool and ridiculously powerful application.
Cool. And what's the cost on that one?
I want to say it was $299.
$299. You know, I've got some Android phones kicking about. I'm quite intrigued by usage. I didn't even consider that you'd be able to do that kind of stuff. I suppose it makes complete sense because they are just tiny little computers, but that's pretty cool. I want to try some stuff there.
I have a buddy down the street from me. He took his old, I want to say it was a Droid 1,
okay,
put Servers Ultimate on, put on a USB hard drive connected to his phone. Now it's a portable DLNA server.
That's nice. That's really cool. Okay. I will have to have a look at that one. Good pick. Kevin, what have you got for us this evening?
My pick today has to do with fitness. There's a this month there seems to be a lot of stuff going on with fitness, wearables and things like that. Summertime coming. I checked out, went back and checked out an app that launched on Windows Phone a little while ago called Adidas My Coach. Mm-hmm. Pretty nice app. It takes advantage of Bluetooth LE, and it will sync with your Bluetooth LE device or heart rate monitor and track your all of your vitals, calories burned, your heart rate and things of that nature. And it has several different nice little workouts and assessment tests that you can do. But the nice thing is it syncs to the cloud and you have all that stored data from your workouts to go back and reference.
That's nice. Does it export in a kind of format that's easily consumable in other apps or anything like that? Or is it a kind of a proprietary?
I have not looked at exporting it yet, but I normally access it via their website.
All right. Okay, cool. Cool. Okay, very good. And that's free as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Very nice. Very nice. Dave, what have you got for this evening?
You know, I've got Skype for iOS because they did a huge update. Well, they did an update. Sure. But in terms of the changes that it brings on iOS, it's fairly significant. In fact, more than fairly. Skype for iOS has been almost unusable by anybody that would be a Skype power user for years because it the way it dealt with Skype servers and kind of the back end stuff was so inefficient that it would burn down your battery or stop working in the background or really any of these terrible things. The new update, they've addressed most of those problems. It's not perfect yet, but it is Skype, so we can't expect it to be perfect. It's going to always be a little flaky, but this new update I can leave running on my iPhone. It doesn't kill battery as much as the other one did. In fact, not even close to what the other one did. It will allow me to turn notifications off for group chats that I'm in. A lot of stuff that just needed to come to iOS finally in this whole revamp. The UI is different. Some may think it's better. Some may think it's worse. In 3 weeks, we won't notice it anyway. So, you know, we'll throw change resistance out the window. But the new Skype for iOS, if you are a Skype user, and you had given up on Skype for iOS, as you should have, it's probably time to revisit this because they've done a decent job at addressing a lot of the things that they needed to deal with this update, with 5.0.
Have they added, I suppose they're calling HD audio, as before the audio was significantly worse than it is when you use it in the desktop app?
You know, that's a good question. I have not tested that, but right. I will. Yeah, I do not know.
Okay, cool. No worries.
Yeah.
Okay, my picks. I'm gonna cheat. Even though I told all you guys here to have one, I'm gonna have two, but one of them is gonna be a quick one. So the first one, and I have to kind of give Dave, I have to give you a bit of a nod for this one. It's the Bodyguard Screen Guards Pure. It was you mentioned it on my Geek Gab a couple of weeks ago, and it was something that I got in my speakers bag from Macworld, and I'm against screen guards because you end up with a like funny little bubbles in them. There's always a bit of dust that you just didn't manage to get out, and frankly, after a couple of weeks of sitting absentmindedly picking at the corner of the stickiness stuff in a meeting, it ends up just looking horrendous. I got this Bodyguard Screen Guards Pure thing in my speakers bag at Macworld, as I said, and it's been sitting in my speakers bag since I came home, never even considered it. And Dave, you mentioned it, as I say, on a MacGeek Gab, and I threw it on at the weekend. It took seconds, and there's no dust or anything like that because it's actually glass. Or to read the side of the box, it says tempered glass. So you don't have to worry about kind of rolling onto the screen or anything like that, and worrying about bubbles and things like that underneath it. It's actually glass. The only minor thing I would say is the Touch ID, because this is actually probably about a millimeter, maybe just slightly thicker, it actually gives you a little bit more of a deep crevice to put your thumb into for your Touch ID on your iPhone. But you kind of get used to that after a little while. And it just feels like you're using the actual screen on the device. It's absolutely superb. And I'm kind of kicking myself. I've went about for 2 months with this in a bag in the corner of my office and never even considered it. But it is a superb little thing.
The glass protectors are awesome. And you're right. You get totally used to the Touch ID thing. I don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah, no. I mean, the only thing that I do notice is it does sort of collect pocket lint, that little area, because it's got quite a big groove in it. Otherwise, it's... absolutely superb. I really, really like it. The other thing I just wanted to mention, and it's sort of a personal plug a little bit for me, the Tesco Bank, and it's probably not for you guys, to be fair, because it's a British thing, but Tesco's is a supermarket chain and they have a bank as well. And I did a bit of consultancy work there. I'm a UX designer during the day. And the app that I designed for them just went live last week. So it's free if you're in the UK and you have a Tesco Bank credit card or current account or anything like that. Please pick it up, because I don't work there anymore. So really, frankly, I'm not going to get any kudos from it, but I'm quite proud of it. So I'd like you to just kind of go and check that out, because, well, it was mine and I like it. So thank you very much, gents, for joining us this evening. It was very, very kind of you to spend your evening listening to my voice most of the time. Where can we find each of you? Kevin, where's the best place for people to catch up with you?
I'm on Twitter @_KevinWheeler, one word. And I also hang out at the Simple Mobile Review website.
Cool. And
SimpleMobileReview.com. I'm sorry.
So it's, and the SMR podcast you occasionally appear on as well.
Yes.
Is that right? Yes. Dor, where can people find your good work?
The easiest place is to go to podnuts.com. That's PODNUTZ.com. We have about 13 shows on there, ranging anything from fixing a Windows computer, adminning servers, Android application, Android rooting, remote support, hard drive diagnostic and repair. I mean, on and on and on and on. If you can think about it, we have a tech topic covering it, it seems like. Paul, I want to thank this moment to thank you for the opportunity to be on your show. Anytime you need someone on the show, I have plenty of leave available to me. Just let me know.
No worries, no worries. I'm very happy to use up government time, so it's all good. It's been a pleasure having you on, Dor. Thank you very much. It's really good.
Thanks.
And Dave, sir, where can people find your good work?
You can find me on Twitter at MacGeekGab. I'm sorry. You can. I confused the whole thing as I'm like pulling all this together. So you can find MacGeekGab on Twitter. You can find me at Dave Hamilton on Twitter, and MacGeekGab.com is where the podcast is, and that'll lead to everything else. So there you go.
Yeah, very good. And Daily Observations, your new show. I really enjoying that. It's good.
Just hey, thanks. Yeah, we're having fun with that Daily Observations. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So if you want to catch up with any of these guys, that's where you can find them, on all those different places. I would highly recommend the SMR podcast and Android App Addicts as well. They're both great, great shows. If you are an Android user, you're Daily, aren't you? You guys, Android App Addicts.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So Daily, and they just review kind of 3 or 4 apps every single day. So it's a good show. And SMR guys like to talk about, well, basically anything. I think you start off with kind of a technology bent, and it can go everything from what color shoelaces you're wearing and everything like that. So if you want to find me, I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. I just want to make a couple of extra calls before we go. We have a Patreon currently running. If you'd like to throw some money our way, $1 a month or something like that, works out about 60 pence in the UK. Would really appreciate it. Patreon.com/British Tech Network. If you just think this show has kind of given you about 30 pence worth of value, that works out about 60 pence a month, please chuck it our way. We're just using it to get new microphones and things like that for the studio. It's made a huge difference to us so far, so we really appreciate everybody that's given us money on Patreon so far. And the other thing is our annual bash. So it's our birthday bash. Every year at the beginning of July, we basically get the whole network together in a village hall in Birmingham, and we do the shows live. There's food, there's beer, and everything like that. And it's a chance for you guys to come along, be involved in the shows, just to meet everybody else that's usually in the chat rooms and everything like that. I'll be there. My wife and kids are coming down as well. Ewan will be there with his wife and kids. Lots of other folk from around the network. Will Green from the Mac Show will be coming along. Pretty much most people that are within reasonable travelling distance that are on the network will be at the bash. If you head on over to thebridgetownnetwork.com, and you'll see a big banner in the middle there for to book your tickets for the bash. There's a curry the night before, it's £10. That's filling up fast. I think we've only got a couple of seats left for that one. And basically that £10 comes off the bill at the end of the night, and then it gets shared out between everybody. And the tickets for the bash are £25, but that covers all your food and drink during the day. And we think we've got a sponsor for it. Ewan's kind of keeping a bit tight-lipped about it, but I think we've got a sponsor, and if that comes off, then we will give you £5 of your money back when you arrive on the day. It's an absolutely great day. Last year we were really lucky. The weather was superb for the day, and it's just an awesome day. It's a family day as well. We have things for the kids and things like that. It's a great, great day. So as I said, you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Paul Wheatley. You want to follow the network on Twitter, that's at British Tech. If you have any questions for me or the network or anything like that, it's BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. That's us. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and thank you very much for lending us your ears for the evening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks. Good night.